Mishnah Yud, we're going to talk about Mechitza Shel Shesi, instead of doing it with the ropes going around, we're going to have like poles stuck in the ground, like mark off an area. So it says in Mishnah Yud, Makifin Bakanim, you can surround your encampment with Kanim. Kanim are these like, you know, on a poles. Literally, Kanim are like, you know, think of it as like bamboo reeds, I don't know what they call, but poles. I guess, yeah, but yes. Kanim in general is mean like those reeds, you know, like, but anyways, whatever it is, the point is just exactly where you're sticking things in the ground to mark it off. Yeah, but it doesn't, it can be made of anything. It can be steel, it can be made of anything. The point is, right? Same exact principles at work here. We're saying as long as the distance between the edge of one pole and the edge of the next pole is less than 3 tefachim, so lavad connects them halachically and makes like a solid halachic machitza partition.
There's no minimum thickness of this.
No minimum thickness. Right. No minimum thickness.
So technically you can put wires.
You can put wires. Anything. Yeah. You can be in a cage, so to speak, whatever, no problem. Yeah. Bishiyar Dibru, Div Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rabbi Yehuda is the first of four opinions we're going to grapple with here. The first is Rabbi Yehuda. He's saying this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah are talking about Dafka Ashiyara. Ashiyara is like this human caravan, meaning you have to have at least three people. There's no such thing as a caravan of a group less than three. He holds that they were only makel in this regard, allowing this sort of this makeshift, minimalistic machitzas if you just using one or the other, either Shesi or Arev, either one or the other, if you have three people there, like encampments. If it's just you're on your lonesome or with one other person, he says, no, it's not okay. You'll need to have both Shesi and Arev. Okay? I didn't see anyone say this but I'm answering Akasha that I think. So what I'm saying what I'm saying now, I'm making up. But I think it's true. Obviously, I wouldn't say it otherwise. The question before was, I asked in the opening of the previous Mishnah, was why dealing with the Bika, Mechitza's work for Rosh Hashanah Rabbim also? Why are you saying in the case Dafka has been a Carmelist? Sounds like it wouldn't work in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Sounds like only, normally we say Erevin work, and Erevin, the coolest of Erevin, because I told you in previous days, was it's a place that's mutter d'oraisa to carry anyway. So the rabbis said, don't carry it, and they made a kula, you know, a way to carry it in. So it sounds like the previous Mishnah were saying, oh, the caravan's in the Bika, so therefore it's only a Durabana, and therefore they are lenient in some way. So what bothers me is that's really strange, because Mechitza's work in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim also. Like any Rosh Hashanah Yachid is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim surrounds it, and then it's got Mechitza's and made into a house. And now it's a house that's of this Rosh Hashanah Yachid and the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So, you know, surrounded by Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So I think the pshat is that since Rabbi Yehuda, for one, and there'll be others also, are only letting these be having kulas of the, you know, just the minimalistic or vertical or horizontal, you know, beams, make a partition. He's only allowing that to be anyways, A, with the Shiara, according to Rabbi Yehuda, with an encampment of three people, and also B, it's in a Bika, as opposed to he wouldn't let it at all in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. I didn't think he would say that explicitly. What's the Gemara doesn't, like a field. A valley. The point is no traffic there. The wilderness.
Shiara would only be in a
Bika. Right, that's you're right. So
they come into a city, then the city takes it over.
Right, so the question is, well, here he's focused on Shiara being three people as opposed to two or one. That's what he's defining. Shiara, we'll see we'll discuss more in other sheets. I'm gonna emphasize what I said. What I just said, that last point I made up, the Gemara doesn't discuss it. The Mefarshim I looked at on the Mishnah don't discuss it. I don't like see why. I'm giving a teretz to the question about why we're focused on a Bika as opposed to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but that's just my teretz. I didn't see anyone say it inside. I know, but they're focused on the number of people again. So the Chacham say no. It said Shiara, because that's the, when else would you make a makeshift, you know, put your saddlebags around and make this sort of ad hoc wall? That's only what, that's just the normal thing would be the Shiara. Right. That when the Gemara, sorry, the Mishnah says it to translate, Lo Dibru Bishiara, the only reason they mentioned Shiara in the previous Mishnah is Ela Behova, because that's just how it was. In other words, that's the normal case. But really, the rabbi, the Chum here, say the truth is, even if you'd be one person or two people, not with a caravan, still one person can set up a machitza of Erev Ashesi, a vertical or horizontal beams, like we said up to now, and that's okay. So the Chum are just arguing the Rehuda saying, still ostensibly still in the story of the encampments, you don't need to have, whether or not you need to have three people. Rabbi Yehuda says three people or more, and the Chacham say no, even one person's okay. Now, the Mishnah continues on, Kol mechitza she'ein shasi v'shel arav, ein mechitza. The third opinion here, this is Divrei Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yehuda's son. He says, listen, no such thing. What we're set up to now is with Lavad, you can make magical mechitzas and say you're offset from the public place. That's, you can eat it with the poles or the straps. He says, no way. He says, you have to have both. I'm not letting you. This, like, you know, three little straps around doesn't count. Or a few little poles on the ground doesn't cut it in terms of a real partition. I want to see vertical and horizontal, you know, components to a mechitza. The Lach doesn't like him. And the Chacham argue, they say, no, Echad Mishnei Devarim. They say either vertical or horizontal is sufficient. You can choose. Now, what's with the Chacham?
There are three people.
The Chacham say anybody. The Chacham say even one. So you have two Shittas Chacham here, which like, so what gives? Why do you have to have, like, four opinions? So they're actually...
Before you go on, mm-hmm. If it's a cross, do you have to have three people?
The Machlokas is... If you need, whether or not you have three, there's no halachic difference between vertical and horizontal. They're on the same equal footing. They're either good or not good, depending on the machlokas, but they're not. There's no advantage to one over the other, in anyone's opinion. So now you have two chachamim. So the Gemara asks, well, what's the difference between this first chacham argued with Rabbi Yehuda and the second chacham argued with Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda? So it answers that the first chacham are saying that it applies only to we're makel and say even an individual person can set this up, but only as like a extenuating circumstance that he's on the road, he's on the derech. That's comparable to the shiara, just the same way the shiara, the caravan, it's like on the way. So too, according to the first set of chacham, they don't limit it to only three people, even one person can do it, but only if he's, why do we mention the caravan? Because just like a caravan has to be sort of like, what do you want? They're in a, you know, pressing situation around the wilderness, so we make one individual in the wilderness. As opposed to the second chacham, who say, no, even the yishuv, even like in the middle of the city, you can set, one man by himself can set up, you know, a bunch of poles around himself, and even though, you know, he could easily set up a more substantial, you know, formal, you know, setup. That's the second chacham, exactly. The chacham, so and that's the halacha. The halacha is like the second chachamim, meaning you can do it shesi, you can do it arev, you can do it vertical or horizontal, doesn't matter. You can do it by yourself or lots of people, you can do it on the derech or in the yachid, and halacha lemaisa, you can do it even in the rishus harabim, not even just in the karmelis. So again, I'm reminding what I said before. I'm not exactly certain how the shittas lie, but I think the reason why we picked up on karmelis at the beginning, the bikka, is probably because these people who are, you see, have other chumras on top, but are only makel in the shiara case because, amongst other reasons, because it's in the bikkah and it's only the rabban anyways. That's my teret to the question. Okay, fine. Now, new points here. It's like a separate mishnah, if you will.
Did you translate the word shiara?
Yeah, shiara means a caravan, meaning people traveling in caravan. You know, like they're moving through the desert. It's a group. I mean, Ladakh desert, but. Okay, so now the Mishnah continues on with like a sort of an unrelated point, sort of loosely connected. It says Arba Devarim Patru B'Machane. The rabbis were exempted people, had like four kulas for people who are in the machane in a military encampment. This means they're in the middle of a war, and they're encamping, and they're obviously under extenuating the circumstances because it's wartime. This would apply both to a melchemes mitzvah as well as a melchemes rishus. Sometimes the halacha differentiate between if it's a mitzvah to make this war or just an optional war. But this is talking about a melchemes, even melchemes rishus, if they opt to go to war to expand the borders or to get rid of people they don't want around. So still, once they're in wartime, they have four kulas that otherwise wouldn't be allowed, and these are them. First of all, mevin etzim mikol makom. The rabbi said, listen, once you're in a wartime in the military encampment, needs wood, so they can get wood from anywhere. Even if it's clearly privately owned wood. In other words,
outside the encampment.
No, we're not talking about Shabbos. Not Shabbos. Okay. We're talking about, the issue here is theft. So in those, they need wood for tonight. The only wood they can find is like in the, you know, in someone's backyard, and it's clearly, you know, it's been cut and dried out and bundled up, and it's someone's private wood. Clearly, they're allowed to take it. They'll have to take it. There's no issue of theft when it comes to in wartime. You can take their, you know, Chazal appropriated everyone's wood for the sake of keeping the soldiers warm at night. Okay, that's number one. Number two, upatura merechitas yadayim, they're exempt from washing their hands. This is referring to washing your hands before eating bread. Obviously, if you have water, you can wash your hands, but the point is, you're not now restricted from eating bread just because you can't find water, or if water's in low supply, then we're not going to jeopardize the security of whatever, of the military encampment by forcing them to get water. Now, the Gemara has an interesting, this is an interesting discussion here. It says that this is only talking about mayim rishonim, washing water with water before you eat, but not mayim achronim. And this is the sugya that says, mayim achronim chova, that washing your hands after you eat is a obligation, and that applies even in the military desert. Now the reason, in military camp, it's in the middle of nowhere. The reason why, this is the sugya, I'm going to explain it, I'm going to speak it out more than I would normally, because I think, after, what we call mayim achronim, mayim achronim.
That's this.
I know. So the rabbis were lenient on the before washing, but they weren't exempting the soldiers from the after washing. So I just want to explain. I want to discuss for a minute about mayim achronim, because I think it's like people see lots of people do lots of weird things, and I don't think it's clear like what's going on. Let me speak it out one time, if you don't mind. Okay. The rabbis said that there are three reasons why people wash for mayim achronim. First of all, because your hands are dirty. If your hands are dirty, you can't make a bracha. End of story. No one disagrees with that. Everyone agrees with that. If you got dirt on your hands, you have to wash them. It doesn't matter about where on your hands. You have to have clean hands before you bench. Or say any bracha for that matter. That's a din.
Because they used to eat with their hands.
Right. So if they used to eat your hands, and still some of them do eat with their hands on some level. So if your hands are dirty, you have to wash them. End of story. It doesn't matter about anything else. That's number one. Number two, the Chazal say, there's a Gemara in Brachas Daf Mem, it says that after you eat, you should eat a bit of salt. That was Chazal's advice. And there's a concern that the salt supply has Melech Stomis sodomite salt in it. Now, the Gemara itself here in Erevin says, you know, how much salt could there be? It could be one grain in like a kur. In other words, like, you know, one grain amongst like a, you know, billion grains of salt. Who cares? If that's the grain that gets in your eye, it's going to make you blind. And therefore, the rabbi said, since Melech Stomis is floating around, there's sodomite salt, and it could get in your eye and cause you blindness. There, and remember, when they did their salt, they would kind of pinch with their fingers, like they put their hand in the salt, not a salt shaker, and then put some in their mouth. So then it could get into your eyes, and therefore they said, make sure you wash your hands after you do that, lest you get that salt into your eyes. There seems to be a third reason, like which seems to be, you don't see it, like, for example, like the Mishnah Berurah wrote down at all, but the Mechaber itself says there's an issue of not putting it in a public place because of the Ruach Ra that Shora on it. There's like a, I don't know what you want to call that, but you know, the bad spirits that hang out in that water. And that's the Shulchan Aruch says that's the reason why you have the restrictions of what you can do with it. The Alpi Kabbalah on the water. On the water. There's Ruach Ra floating around there. So that's, I think it's just Alpi Kabbalah. I'm not exactly, it found its way into the Shulchan Aruch already. Mechaber. But there's a Kabbalistic issue of like the Ruach Ra floating around. The same kind of stuff that you have floating around when you wash your hands in the morning three times on each side. Fine. So, now, Tosfos says, listen, Ruach Stomis isn't Matzi anymore. We don't have it around. Melech Stomis, correct. Sorry, Melech Stomis, you know, the sodomite salt's not around anymore, and it's not really a problem, and therefore people are noeg to make and not wash their hands after they eat because nothing to worry about. Okay? He also, that's reason number one. Reason number two is he says, anyways, that like people don't necessarily do this salt dipping business anymore. So because of that, Tosfos says, to be makel, you can be makel. Many people rely on that Tosfos. The Mishnah Berurah, those two sheep. The Mishnah Berurah says that, first of all, he says, even before we get into the discussion beyond that, he says that who says that Melech Stomis is the only salt in the world that has this property? And maybe other salts from other regions, if not from stone, could cause equal eye problems. And therefore he says, could that be machmir anyways? But now, revisiting now the reasons. First of all, Mishnah Berurah passes the halacha. First of all, I'm talking about Ashkenaz and Sephardim. It says chova, there's no equivocation. I was just looking now in Yalka Yosef. He comes up very strongly, you have to do it. Don't even think about not doing it. Sephardim are machmir. We'll get back to one in a second. They have the Ikra Din of the Shulchan Aruch, plus on top of that, they have this Kabbalistic stuff to boot. So, so no Sephardim have a Minhag not to do it. All Sephardim are very strict about it. No Sfarim have a minog not to do the Mayim Achronim. All Sfarim do Mayim Achronim. Some Ashkenazim have a minog not to do Mayim Achronim, and they're relying on the they're different pieces and parts of they're different groups. So they're relying on this Tosos. Now, first of all, everyone agrees, even them, everyone agrees, if your hands would be dirty, even by accident, you of course have to wash them before you bench. That's a non-starter. Okay? That's reason number one of Mayim Achronim. Number two is the salt. So now many say the salt is a matzui. They rely on, it's not around anymore. They rely on the Tosfos, and they don't wash Mayim Achronim because of that. There's like then some again who say, listen, you have to be machmir for the fact of this, like the Kabbalistic stuff. I don't know, the Ruach Tumah floating around.
To some. You could use water that a drug would drink. It doesn't have to be clean water.
Right, but it seems that even if you use clean water, then it has like a status of ruach tuma floating on afterwards. What it seems. So that's the story.
Why are you using water that has ruach tuma?
You're not. You're using clean water, which seems to get ruach tuma afterwards.
To get the ruach tuma.
Like it has like the somehow after my makarim, the water is now infused with tuma. It seems like that again. I didn't see anywhere in Nigla outside of the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the Kuf Pei Aleph and Simon Beis. He says, the Mechaber says, don't pour it in the public place because the Ruach Tumah floating on it. So there you go. Now, it's going to come out then, according to the Mishnah Berurah for Ashkenazim, that people certainly should be machmir and should wash Mayim Achronim unless they have a minhag not to do so. Hey, now, so if you have a minhag, unless you have that positive minhag not to do it, then the de facto thing is you should wash Mayim Achronim. Now, how much should you wash? So the Mishnah Berurah himself, he says, I don't like these jokers who like put the tiny drop of water on the fingertips and do that business, you know, one drop. He says that's good as nothing. The Me'ikra Din, you have to wash Mayim Achronim to your second knuckle. Okay, the middle knuckle of your fingers, and it'll be the first knuckle of your thumb. The Mishnah Berurah says, first of all, because that's where dirt gets up to. Like that's when you're eating with your hand, that's the part how your knuckles on the top of your hands and palms don't get dirty, typically. Obviously, if they do, then you have to wash them. But in normal circumstances, you have to be safe and wash the first two knuckles. The Gra says, no way, you have to wash the three knuckles. So you have the whole length of your finger to do, like how you wash, say, on like a Tishba, whatever it is. And I guess, as far as the Gra is concerned, you want a Revius, and the more the merrier. The more water, the better, because the cleaner the hands, the better. Sfardim, because of this Ruach Tumah being generated, so they want to have less water. Okay? So, like, that's a balance. But if you're not a Sephardi, you don't have to worry about that. You basically want to wash your hands, make sure that they're clean, and really make her then at least to two knuckles, everyone agrees, not just that little drip on the fingertips. And you want to be like the Gras, so do the whole three, you know, so three knuckles. Obviously, all this being the case, that little tiny, you know, like, eyedropper that I pass around the table to wash my machronim isn't going to cut it. It's not going to cut it. Sfardim seem to be more noag to that thing because they want less water and you can just pour a little bit. But I think if you're Ashki and you want to do everything right, you should just go to the sink and wash your hands and be done with it, right? Down the drain it goes and everything will be clean. Right, I understand. I'm saying it's
just one pour?
Just one pour. Just one pour? Yeah, the point is it should be clean.
Is this strange for the cheese up to be clean because.
Whatever it takes. If you actually have, obvious Ba'ain dirt, if you see grime on your fingers, you have to wash it off.
Whatever. Take,
yeah, I guess. I mean, nowadays, like we have the luxury of having like running water
and napkins and
soap, and it's like easy. So like now it's a no. But I guess in Chazal's time, when water was hard to come, I had to draw it out of a well, and you see they're being makel here. So then at least do your best under the circumstances, minimally, you know, rinse your hands off. Agreed today. I think the way to do it today is to make sure they're, you know, clean, if that takes soap and water and scrubbing and everything else, do what you gotta do.
Or you just don't enforce it.
That's a good question. It depends on the issue of the Ruach Tumah. Bottom line is it should be poured. It should be poured if you're worried about the Tumah stuff. If you ignore the Tumah stuff, you certainly can, it's not part of Nigla, so then you can just use the sink, wash your hands. You know, that's fine. That's certainly fine. Make sure your hands are clean before you bench. And that's how it's going to come out then with all this stuff. So just now tying it back to the Mishnah. So the rabbis were makel when it comes to Mayim Rishonim, because they said that's only like a zecher for truma and like, you know, eating bread. But the other issue is this melech stomas issue, the salt from stoma issue, which is dangerous. And there's the famous Gemara, it says that the sakanta chamira meisura, like if someone's a risk to you, that's more chamor, more serious, have to be taken more seriously than regular halachic isurim. And therefore, even though the rabbis were makel when it comes to washing your hands before, they said, no, you have to wash your hands afterwards, lest you get hurt by the salt. Mm-hmm. Fine, that's that. That's the second. The third of the kulas for the army encampments is the demai. They're allowed to eat demai. You'll remember from demai, that was the food purchased from an amaretz. Anyone who hasn't got proper ne'amanus of taking tithes, you have to be afraid that they left the trumas ma'isa there. The way demai is looked at in the Mishnah is based on that, you know, that census that was taken by Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that most amaretz and most people do take proper tithes, just a minority don't. And therefore, the halacha was that people should retie their food, at least getting out the, if you recall, the Trumas Meister, that 1%, and also taking the, they're being told they redeem the Kedusha of Meister Sheni for that year onto a coin, because you can't eat Meister Sheni outside of Jerusalem and Betuma and so on. But all that's makel, we said, for example, we have a lalach, you can give it to aniyim, poor people, and similarly here under that same kind of exemption, if they have the mind to eat, we're not going to make them crazy, we'll rely on the fact that the majority of food is properly tithed and therefore they can eat it, it's not a problem. And finally, Umila Arev, they have an exemption, they don't need to make Erev, and this is an Erev, this is talking about Erev Chatzeros. Erev Chatzeros. So in other words, like this, if you recall, the picture we had on the, a couple of days ago, there's an encampment, that's like the Chatzer, and then they have like a bunch of like tents, let's call it, inside the encampment, that's where they're encamping. So we said, the commonly used area needs an Erev Chatzeros, the food has to, you know, everyone has to donate a bit of bread and put into one tent or whatever it is to unify the area, otherwise you couldn't carry in the common area around your tents, around your homes. So here they're makel. They're saying even if you didn't do that, you're still makel because at the end of the day, it's a Rishus Yachid, totally surrounded just with a bunch of private, you know, tents within it, and therefore that's just a chumrah, and the rabbis are makel there because they don't have over difficult situations in terms of prep in the army in the middle of the desert, in the middle of wartime. Okay, so that's those are the four kulas that they had, and I guess because of this last point with Mila Arev, that's why it's, of course, a tie-in to our perek. Okay.